It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Solemn Memorial Day for the president, one punctuated by speeches, songs, and of course, heartfelt salutes for the folks who paid the ultimate price in serving our country and defending our freedom.
We are gathered here on the sacred soil of Arlington National Cemetery to honor the lives and deeds of America's greatest heroes, the men and women who laid down their lives for our freedom.
In marking the second Memorial Day of his presidency, President Trump today called on all Americans to never forget the sacrifice of fallen U.S. service members, saying they shared a love more deep and more pure than most will ever know. Among the many veterans in the audience today, 94-year-old Bob Dole, former Kansas senator who spent nearly four decades in Congress and was wounded in combat in World War II and received a thunderous ovation from the gathering.
That was Kevin Cork on Fox, and of course, that's what happened on Memorial Day yesterday at the nation's capital. Sandy Rios with you. You know, I have to say, for all of the downside of Washington, D.C., and there certainly are a lot of downsides because I talk about them a lot, there is no place in this country where there is a sense of service and purpose and of the roots and underpinnings of this nation than there is in D.C. If you've never been to D.C. on the 4th of July or Memorial Day or Veterans Day or, you know, you fill in the blank, then you have missed it. The service at the National Cemetery, Arlington Cemetery, is the most beautiful. And you could see in President Trump's face the sobriety, the way he takes this so seriously, as all presidents should. And as he laid the wreath to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, if you have not been there, even if it's not a holiday, you have to go to Arlington. You see all of those white crosses, and you really do recognize what a price people have paid for our freedoms. You know, last time I was there, there were moms, people, relatives, sitting in lawn chairs at various gravestones. You know, some of the parts of the cemetery are, of course, Civil War and older. And World War I, World War II, Korea War, you fill in the blanks. But in the most recent graves, there were a handful of wives and mothers sitting at their graves. And so I had the privilege of going over and talking to a few Gold Star mothers. And it was just so moving, really, honestly, when you understand that our kids are still laying down their lives. Many of them really do still love this country, and they serve valiantly, and it goes into this vast nothingness of echo chamber because people aren't paying attention, and we can't let that happen. I don't think most of you listening to me are letting that happen, but that's why we try to remember. We remember. And you know, that's scriptural. Jesus pointed out pretty clearly in God, in the Old Testament, God and Jesus are the same, by the way, theologically, I'm not confused about that, but God in the Old Testament talked about reciting verses to our children, writing them on the law, on our foreheads, the phylacteries, what it became, remembering the law, recited in the mornings, recited in the evenings. And really, he understood that the human nature was to forget. And we do forget if we don't rehearse things to ourselves. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a flaw in his design. I don't know. But we must remember, and we have to consciously, with discipline, make ourselves remember the things in our own lives we need to be grateful for, the things for this country we need to be grateful for, and certainly the things that God has done for us and forgiven us for, to be grateful for. But President Trump very soberly laid the wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and He said that the heroes who died for America rest in these hallowed fields, in cemeteries, battlefields, and burial grounds near and far, and are drawn from the full tapestry of American life. They came from every generation, from towering cities and windswept prairies, from privilege and from poverty. They were generals and privates, captains and corporals of every race, color, and of every creed. But they were all brothers and sisters in arms, and they were all united then, as they are united now, forever, by their undying love of our great country. You know, he was speaking to the cabinet members, to military leaders, families, veterans, in the amphitheater near the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Also present was Lieutenant General John Kelly, who was his chief of staff, the president's chief of staff, who lost his son, Robert Kelly, Lieutenant Robert Kelly, November 10th, after he stepped on a landmine in southern Afghanistan. We need to remember that, too, that John Kelly has paid a terrible price, a very deep price in some ways, more than giving your own life, the life of your own son, for the safety of the country. So we are remembering. We remembered yesterday, and we won't forget, right? I know we won't. Well, of course, now back to home and pressing matters. Kevin Cork has another part to his report in which he talks about what's happening, the latest on this Russian collusion. And, of course, we're going to talk about that a great deal. But let's listen to Kevin.
While the president spent this Memorial Day honoring the memories of the fallen, both on hallowed ground and online, he began it by focusing his attention to a discussion on Fox News on so-called Spygate and the idea that the FBI placed an informant into or around the Trump campaign during and after the 2016 election. On Twitter, Mr. Trump quoted constitutional legal scholar Jonathan Turley, who told Fox that the president deserves some answers. Said of ousted acting AG Sally Yates, "I find her actions to be really quite unbelievable." And said if the Obama administration put the opposing campaign's presidential candidate or his campaign under investigation, that raises legitimate questions. Adding, it goes to the heart of our electoral system.
We should get everyone involved in, get them on the record, and get that record to the public. Because at some point, we're going to have to come back together as a country. This division is getting deeper, and it's because politicians on both sides are playing games with these investigations.
While New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer noted in a tweet the Mueller investigation's 19 indictments and 3 guilty pleas, he failed to mention that there's been no evidence of Russian collusion uncovered by the special counsel, who may not, if the president's lawyers have their way, get an opportunity to interview the president in the Russia probe.
And the reality is, we're not going to sit him down if this is a trap for perjury. And until we're convinced of that, and if they don't show us these documents, well, we just going to have to say no.
Giuliani says the president insists he wants to sit down with the special counsel. In fact, he said as much on the record, Mike, but it's also important to point out that his lawyers, at least for now, are advising against it.
All right, you know, it's interesting because if I were to ask any of you if you knew what the Watergate burglary was all about, would you know? You know, I happen to remember that pretty well. And the Watergate burglary, which was authorized by sitting President Richard Nixon, which was around the time of an election coming up, there were two of them. There was a few of them planning, and I think maybe just one went in. And they were burglarizing the DNC, the Democratic National Committee headquarters. My understanding was that they thought that the DNC was connected to Cuba. And they wanted to see what those connections were. They sensed some very nefarious stuff. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? But the point was the whole world broke loose. Nixon had to resign because they found out that he authorized this burglary into the DNC. Now, that was such a big deal that the press just, they hated Nixon already for a lot of reasons, which sometime maybe we'll go into more of that because it goes back to way back to his anti-communist stands in the 50s. So Richard Nixon authorized that, and he was, that was the first president I ever saw destroyed by the press. I mean, he really was destroyed by the press. Whether you feel like it was justified or not, I'm just telling you, the press did it every day. I mean, they were relentless, and it was, you would have thought the world had ended because of that authorized burglary. Well, it was a serious offense, but now we have, Democrats, preparing and paying for a tabloid dossier on the Republican candidate paid for by Hillary's campaign and by the DNC. And you have the FBI and the Justice Department cooperating with the notion that maybe, you know, let's call this true and use this as a basis of investigating this Republican candidate for president. In fact, let's go further. Let's pay a person to sort of set up three members of his election campaign and two very much on the fringe. One of the more deeply connected, Sam Clovis, and I'll talk about that, maybe not today, but in the next few days, and to spy on them and make money in the process. And you see, nothing to see here. This is, but that's nothing. Why, that's just nothing. And they're trying to tell us, actually, that they put this spy in the campaign to help the president, you see, because they were afraid that the Russians were trying to influence his campaign. They just were trying to, you know, they were trying to help. That's really honestly what they're trying to tell us. This is how crazy they think we are. Don't fall for it. It's a very, very serious breach. As it was a serious breach for Richard Nixon to authorize the break into the Democratic National Committee. That was a big deal. He stepped down for the presidency on that. But Barack Obama, you know, he's signing deals with Netflix. Hillary is, you know, making speeches for tons of money. And so are the Obamas, for that matter. I don't know about the former Attorney General Loretta Lynch. I'm not sure what she's doing. But lots of them are speaking out. And I have a feeling that they have very dirty hands. So we'll just see if justice is ever done. We pray that it is. You know, there's a price to be paid for speaking the truth. And that's kind of going to be the theme today in a lot of different forms. But it was Rudy Giuliani's birthday over the weekend. I think 73rd. I think that's what it was. And he was at the Yankees game. That's his hometown, New York City. And he's there among his fellow New Yorkers. And this is how it went down.
The New York Yankees wish a very happy birthday to Mayor Giuliani.
Happy birthday to Rudy Giuliani. Boo! So that's what happened with over the weekend. You know, the point in playing that short little clip is just that really things have gotten so divisive between, I'd say, the left and the right. You see, I don't really think of it in terms of party. Just don't. The left has become so intolerant. Oh, of course, they're so tolerant, you see. They fancy that they're extremely tolerant. Have you ever seen any of those coexist signs? They're so tolerant that they want to destroy anybody that disagrees with them. I was just talking to someone yesterday about family members who have just absolutely shut them out, won't have anything to do with them over the presidential election and things surrounding that, issues surrounding it. I don't think that's an unusual story. But Rudy Giuliani, you know, is paying a personal price, being booed by his. He used to be the mayor of New York, one of the most beloved mayors of New York. But now because he's representing Donald Trump, he gets booed on his birthday at Yankee Stadium. Reminds me very much of Saul Alinsky, whose tactic, of course, was to target your opponent and to destroy them and make it personal. Make it personal so that they feel it, so that it hurts their feelings. You isolate them and you target them. And it sounds like that's what Mr. Giuliani is experiencing right now in his beloved New York City. I want to mention one more thing that happened while we were having a weekend. Ireland, dear Ireland, the last holdout besides Poland, in Europe on abortion, lost a referendum and made abortion legal as of Friday by about a 2-to-1 margin, which no one saw coming. I mean, it is just the saddest thing. And of course, people are gloating about that. And behind this, you might be surprised, or maybe not, that George Soros, the billionaire godfather of globalism, who's trying to destroy our country, but just not here, the rest of the world too, did tons to make that referendum pass, and sort of dubbed U2 and the rock group. They helped too. Oh, and another actor. Isn't that helpful? Isn't that wonderful? Especially that U2 is supposedly a Christian group. That's disgusting to me. But they helped. They did their part, and now abortion will be legal in Ireland. All right. When we come back, I have an incredible story for you. So don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Why does AFA keep harping on the dangers of the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why? It's because we've looked into the eyes of the mother of a teen suicide victim. Patrice Bright was mom to a normal, happy 14-year-old cheerleader dealing with the challenges any teenager faces. But her outlook on life was apparently darkened after she binge-watched season one of 13 Reasons Why. Anna Bright chose to deal with her temporary teen problems with the permanent act of suicide. Several other teens and young adults have made the same choice after watching this show, which glorifies suicide. The American Family Association and others have pointed out the dangers of the program to Netflix. But, apparently motivated by money, Netflix has just released season two. Our hope is to save teen lives by getting Netflix to pull the series before another tragedy occurs. You can learn more and sign the 13 Reasons Why petition at afa.net.
Let's get over the idea that women stay at home because they're not able to do anything else. This is Jim Garlow in a special series for the family. Many women choose to stay home to raise their children, to train them up to love God and His Word. But not just women who have husbands who make a lot of money so they can. For many, it's a choice and a sacrifice that comes with that choice. Let me say to you to whom that applies, you're doing a task. You're building into lives with eternal significance. What you're constructing is so far beyond what is built with hands. Working outside the home is fine, and that's your call. But what you're doing inside the home is so remarkable, it's beyond description. Your capacity to nurture your children is a role no one but you can fulfill. God bless you for it. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The Mormons have decided to sever ties with the Boy Scouts, ending a relationship that goes back nearly a century. The Mormons have long been the biggest sponsor of Boy Scout troops, representing more than 400,000 boys. They plan on starting their own youth program, but the church had been deeply troubled by policy changes on gays in scouting. Many Catholic and Protestant churches have already left the once-storied program, a drop of more than 10% since 2013. The Boy Scouts did not have to capitulate to the social justice warriors. They had the Supreme Court on their side. They had the American people on their side. But instead of standing up to the bullies, they backed down. First, it was opening the door to gay scouts, then gay leaders, then transgender scouts, then Girl Scouts. Then they changed the name. And soon I predict the Boy Scouts will lift their ban on atheists, because once you turn your back on your values, it's pretty easy to turn your back on God. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The content of one streaming. I've been arrested for breach of peace.
I've
been arrested for breach of peace. You've all watched this. You've all watched this. Can you get me a solicitor?
Can you get me a solicitor? Just turn off your life feed, please.
Yeah?
Do you understand what I've just said?
No, can you explain it again?
Causing a breach of the peace.
What does that mean? I'm insulting people.
This is free speech. This is where we're at. You're not even allowed to. Look at this.
Look how many people.
Tom, what are you trying to hide? Do you know when you do this? More people. I haven't said a word. In fact, someone laid their hand and assaulted me outside court. Other people swore at me and threatened me about my mother, and here I am being arrested for saying nothing.
God, Tommy.
Breach of the peace. Apparently, I'm inciting on my video. Can you please, George, get me a solicitor?
Because I'm on a suspended sentence.
He has actually done nothing wrong. That's
an amazing thing that happened just in the last few days in Great Britain. Sandy Rios back with you, and this is a story that you just have to know. I probably will come back to this again because I think We are learning that we already know that Europe is cracking down on free speech. Cracking down might be sort of like passé. They are well out of the gates and cracking down on free speech. And as I'm hearing it described to me, it's worse than any other European country. They are shutting people up. That was the voice of Tommy Robinson. Tommy is an activist in Great Britain who's been trying to shout the clarion call about the rise of the Islamists in Great Britain. You know, they've been allowing radical Muslim preachers in Great Britain preaching on the streets the most vile kinds of hate for the last several years. And Tommy Robinson has been one of the ones talking against it. And most recently, there have been a gang of young Muslim, I don't know how young they are, but Muslim men who have these have formed these rape gangs. And what they do is they kidnap British girls, the infidels, you know, off the streets. They can be, you know, one is as young as 12 who was reported pregnant by this. And they take them in, they drug them, they bring them in for these sexual orgies. It is a nightmare. It's a lot like what's happening in Sweden. You know, I've talked about the rape culture in Sweden, but really, honestly, I have to tell you, I did not know that that was happening in Britain. So Tommy Robinson was out in front of the courtroom where these Muslim men are being prosecuted, and he was arrested and immediately sent and sentenced to prison for 13 years. You know, I think probably I could say a lot about Tommy Robinson, but I wanted you to hear this next clip. Paul Weston is a politician and a member of the Pegida UK leadership team. He's been writing about this, but he also did a video. You have to also understand that immediately they put a gag order, meaning the British government put a gag order on reporting anything about Tommy Robinson. Suddenly, outlets that were reporting on him were taken down. Videos, YouTube videos of his arrest. No one in Britain who's in journalism is allowed to speak about this, except for one outlet that I understand, and that's the Independent UK. And the Independent is a really far-left publication who describes Tommy, of course, in the most unflattering terms. And their pieces have been allowed to stay because they put it in the context that if it's going to be reported, the British government is okay with it being reported like that, which makes him sound like an extremist. But I want you to hear Paul Weston as he just kind of describes what's happened to Tommy Robinson over the weekend. Let's listen.
Tommy Robinson was arrested last Friday, and this comes just days after Muslim Sajid Javid became Britain's new Home Secretary, which is more than a little coincidental, one has to assume. Tommy was accused of breaching the peace, which is a lie, and immediately surrounded by seven members of Britain's heavily politicised paramilitary police force, bundled into the back of a van, taken straight to court, and then sent straight to prison. Several news outlets covered the arrests, but a la Orwell's 1984, they have already been consigned to the memory hole, which basically means the British government has issued what is called a D-notice, or a reporting restriction on the British press. And such an unprecedented judicial decision is usually associated with issues of national security, and not, to the best of my knowledge, has ever been used before to silence a journalist in Britain and to then silence the silencing of a journalist, which my little left-wing half-witted friends is exactly what Tommy is. He's a journalist, and a far better journalist than most of the beta males and epsilon semi-moron females working in Britain's Marxist media can ever hope to be. The details surrounding Tommy's jailing are not completely clear. We know he was serving a suspended sentence for contempt of court, which was issued because he had previously covered a criminal trial consisting of the usual suspects in the world of culturally inspired rape and torture, which our ruling elites would rather we did not know about.
All right, so that's the first part of Paul Weston's remarks. By the way, he's just written an article called Britain is Now a Genuine Police State. And bottom line on this, Tommy Robinson has been sentenced to 13 months. And within Britain's penal system and in their penitentiaries, there are all kinds of Muslim gangs. So people are, his attorney, his friends, people all over the world are saying his life is in danger. In fact, I will read a comment by a member of the UK who says basically, it's UK IP, Peer Malcolm Lord Pearson has written to Home Secretary Sajid Javid today saying if Tommy is murdered or injured in prison, he and others will mount a private prosecution against Mr. Javid as an accessory or for misconduct in public office. And that's just one example of the responses of this. I want to kind of, Tommy Robinson is new to me. I know that Geert Wilder in the Netherlands, I've met Geert. He has been the person in the Netherlands who has stood by himself fighting what's been happening in the Netherlands and received, death threats and very serious punishment for just trying to speak the truth. And so I think that Tommy is of that ilk. He is the founder of English Defense League. And I do know his real name is Stephen Christopher Yoxley Lennon. On Good Morning Britain, he actually said that the Quran is a violent and cursed book. He's a contributor for The Revel, a conservative media outlet. So that kind of gives you an idea of the kinds of things that Tommy Robinson has done. I want you to hear more of Paul Weston because he articulates it so beautifully, if it could be beautiful. And he goes on to explain what's happening with Tommy. Let's listen.
Reporting restrictions on criminal trials are usually issued because the judiciary don't want to lose a prosecution via interference with a jury. But the reporting restrictions on the hundreds of gang rape trials are not issued for this perfectly valid reason. They exist only in order that the general public remain completely in the dark as to the extent of the gang rapes and, more importantly, the extent to which the government, police, social workers and journalists are absolutely complicit in the gang rape themselves. So when Tommy draws attention to this grotesque failure of every single arm of the state, whose job it is to protect innocent, vulnerable English girls from the deprivations of imported gang rapists, the state suffers acute embarrassment, and rather than confronting the core problem of the cultural ideology behind the rape of infidel girls, it chooses instead to silence those who embarrass them.
So Tommy Robinson has been arrested. He's been sentenced. He was sentenced immediately. Immediately. No trial, nothing. A UK Independence Party leader, European MP Gerard Batten says, "What kind of a police state have we become? I'm trying to recall a legal case where someone was convicted of a crime which cannot be reported on." And that's the thing that Paul just mentioned. Paul Weston just mentioned that these media outlets now in England and in Europe are forbidden from reporting, and they happily comply. I mean, when did you hear? What have you heard? How have I not heard about the rape culture in Britain? Haven't heard anything about that. Really, honestly, I haven't, as much as I cover this. And so now, because Tommy Robinson was out talking about it, reporting about it, just in a suit in front of Whitehall, talking about what was going on, about the trial, that's why they arrested him. Called him, what, a breach of the peace? That's what they called it. Okay, so here is an outlet that Gatestone Institute, you've heard me interview many of their experts. I think they're one of the best. They're based in New York City. And this is a piece by Bruce Bauer. And this is his title, UK, You're Not Allowed to Talk About It. About what? Don't ask. And here are some quotes. "I am in a country that is not free. I feel jealous as blank of you guys in America. You don't know how lucky you are." That's a quote from Carl Benjamin, who calls himself the Sargon of Akkad. He's a YouTuber who has like a million subscribers. And then Gerald Batten, I just quoted, gave you his quote. "I'm trying to recall a legal case where someone was convicted of a crime which cannot be reported on." And that's kind of that's the part of that. There's more. I want to talk to you about how it was removed from media. So in this article by Bruce Bauer of Gatestone, he says, Facebook friends posted a link to what was apparently a news story at Breitbart, UK, about Robinson's imprisonment in Hull. 3 hours later, however, the story was no longer there. Shortly afterward, I clicked on a link to an article at the Hull Daily Mail that Google summed up as follows. "Supporters of former EDL leader Tommy Robinson are urging people to write to him in Hull Prison. where they say he is in grave danger. When I clicked on the link, however, the story had been pulled. And then he talks about Carl Benjamin, who I just quoted, who's he's a YouTuber whose name on YouTube is the Sargon of Akkad. He's a very bold guy and speaks out very clearly about Islam. But now he has actually started becoming very careful. And the guy from Gatestone, Bruce, writes this about Benjamin, a.k.a. the Sargon of Akkad. Benjamin is a gutsy guy, so it was unsettling to hear him speak this way. And he says, Benjamin says, I am in a country that is not free. My options are limited. And I'm going to repeat. He says, I feel jealous as blank of you guys in America. You don't know how lucky you are. Judy McLeod, who's the editor of the Canada Free Press, said this. Where's Tommy Robinson? A question whose answer should be demanded rather than merely ask. Modern-day Merry England has become far more nightmare than fairy tale as it steadily works its way toward ugly police state status. All right, so I want you to hear how Paul Weston kind of sums up what's going on in Great Britain. This is the final clip.
The police arrested Tommy on a pretext. He wasn't breaching the peace at all. This was a lie, and a lie of such importance it couldn't possibly have come from rank-and-file coppers or even chief constables with degrees in transformational social justice and common purpose. This lie came directly from Theresa May's government. This lie came from the very top down, and it was planned to the last detail. A courtroom and a judge were waiting to immediately sentence him. A prison cell was booked in his name. The D-notice had already been activated. This combined is the action of a totalitarian state in all its brutal horror. This is the action of Nazi Germany, of Soviet Russia, of Maoist China. This is the action of a state no different to the states that murdered over 100 million people in the last century, and the action of a state with no regard for democracy, equality before the law, or freedom of speech. This is the action of a fully fledged totalitarian state, and it has happened in England.
All right, it's just sad, and it's just the beginning, and I want to tell you more. We're going to put that YouTube, we'll put it on our Facebook and hope that it stays live. I'll also put an article that kind of lays this out so that you can have access to it and share it. But bringing this back home, I have hinted at this, but I haven't been specific. I want you to understand that we're having the same thing. We are seeing the beginnings of it in this country. It had already started, but it probably hasn't affected enough of you for you to recognize this. Facebook is probably doing as much as anyone. As of last week, for instance, they are refusing to post anything that they consider political. And the category is so broad, it's amazing. So now we're having issues with trying to post. For instance, there was a Facebook post that said something about Jim Jordan for Speaker of the House, and they refused to post it. There was another one, a book on Barack Obama. It was kind of the author, who is Matt Margolis, tried to post an ad for his book on Barack Obama, and they refused to let him post it. And what they're doing is, as of a date last week, I think it might have been Tuesday, one of those days last week, Facebook now has a policy that if you want to run so-called political ads, and of course the broad definition of political is very broad, you have to send your first and last name, a copy of your driver's license, unredacted, front and back, your home address, your social security number, and then if you're lucky, they'll approve it and run with your article. But it takes 2 weeks. It has to take place in the mail. I also got it. I don't know if any of the rest of you got this. I didn't capture it because I didn't realize I would not be able to get back to it. But it just, on Facebook, when I went on a couple of days ago, it said that their news articles are now going to be vetted by three different sources. And I only remember one of them because, again, I saw it so quickly. It was the Walter Cronkite Institute for something. And these sources were going to help them decide which news articles were true and which were not, which I found rich, given the fact that I personally know that Walter Cronkite was the biggest liar this country has ever, America's most trusted news anchor, lied repeatedly I know this because I sat at a table with Bernard Nathanson, the abortionist turned pro-lifer, who told me how Walter Cronkite carried the water for them in reporting false information. But he's going to tell you what's honest.
David, the son of Jesse, just an ordinary giant slayer. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. David's battle with Goliath is an epic drama where the little boy stands in God's power to conquer the Philistine giant. David didn't awaken that morning expecting to slay a giant. He didn't stroll in with an entourage after a rugged mountain range training camp like Rocky and Rocky IV. He was just a regular kid bringing his brothers lunch, but fully confident in God's immeasurable power. Though he saw Goliath, David never acknowledged him as a giant, saying, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine who dared defy the Lord of hosts?" When regular people are fully persuaded, fully confident in God's power, giants fall.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program. I encourage you to listen as we work verse by verse through the scriptures each Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. Join me as we explore the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk radio program, Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
Women and men alike find themselves in despair after an abortion. Every woman who had an abortion was for a short time a mother, every man a father. But afterwards, they're all people in pain, anger, sadness, relationship problems. These often accompany an abortion. But there is hope. Call 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who has already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
The American Family Association invites you to a very special gathering of AFA friends from across America this fall at the Big Cedar Lodge in the Ozarks. The AFA retreat will be a relaxing time of fellowship and inspiration. Speakers include Sandy Rios, Dr. Ray Pritchard, Todd Starnes, Abraham Hamilton III, and Ed Battagliano, and Dennis Jernigan will lead us in worship. Experience all of this in a beautiful setting that dates back to the 1920s, built originally to be a wilderness retreat for a prominent Missouri family. We hope you'll join us October 8th through the 11th at the rustic Big Cedar Lodge just south of Branson on Table Rock Lake. It promises to be a refreshing time of worship, teaching, fellowship, and fun. To register or for more information, visit afafoundation.net. Seating is limited, so register today. Hope to see you there.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Americans transfixed lately by plucky Winston Churchill and the UK's newly expanded royal family may be shocked to learn that our closest European ally is submitting to Sharia supremacism. One of the most appalling manifestations of this capitulation is the phenomenon of so-called grooming gangs. Actually, these groups of mostly South Asian men enslave and serially rape British women and girls, often with the knowledge of, but unhindered by, the authorities. The UK's media rarely cover this outrage, either because of government restrictions or self-censorship. And last week, another plucky Brit named Tommy Robinson, who fearlessly challenges Sharia supremacism, was thrown in jail for 13 months, merely for reporting on the trial of one such grooming gang. He risks being murdered there. Britain must stand up for freedom or inevitably succumb to the jihadists' Sharia. The place to start is by freeing Tommy Robinson. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The whole thing with this investigation that was going on, which we consider spying, was done before Mueller got involved. But it completely taints his investigation.
There is no evidence to support that spy theory.
You can't say you're spying on the Russians if what you're trying to do is to show the Russians are colluding, whatever that means, with the Trump campaign.
It appears that there was an investigation not of the campaign, but of certain individuals who have a history that we should be suspicious of that predate the presidential campaign.
Okay, so that was Mayor Giuliani. No, the counsel to the president. I'm so glad he's there. And then also then Adam Schiff, who nothing, there's no spy, no evidence of that. Mr. Schiff, who has been the biggest leaker out of Congress in terms of information, who was the counter to Devin Nunes on the House Intelligence Committee. And then you have Marco Rubio, who I don't know who has invaded his body, but there he is. Claiming that it's not a big deal that there's be somebody in the Trump campaign. I guess he's still mad at Donald Trump for, he was insulted by Donald Trump during the election. But that's the only possible theory that I have on why he would denigrate the notion that someone had infiltrated the Trump campaign and was spying. We have serious problems. We have very serious problems in this country. And one of the things I've said to you so often, almost every day, I tell you about the horrible leadership of the Republican Party. The only possible people that could possibly fight back are oversee effective committee investigations on all of this stuff. I had someone ask me yesterday, when is Hillary Clinton and when is the Clinton Foundation and when are these people ever going to be held accountable? Well, they won't, as long as you have leaders like who we have in the Republican Party now. And I saw just last week, an interview with Bret Baier and leader Mitch McConnell. And honestly, I thought, I don't want to overstate it, but maybe I have to. I was so appalled by the vapid responses, which is what I'm used to from Senator McConnell. Nothing surprised me, but I wonder if you understand. This is who's leading the Senate. This is who's overseeing all of this pushback. Ha! Huh. Alleged pushback. This is the guy with the fire in his belly who's fighting back. All of the things, all of the corruption that we are seeing unfolding, and we have been for the last, 8 years, 10 years? So I wanted you to hear his interaction with Bret Baier. I just want you to hear it. I want you to hear the leader of the Senate. And I want those of you in Kentucky to hear it, because this is who you continue to send to the Senate. And this is the guy who wields the strings of power. So I just want you to hear this in this response. Okay, so this first interaction is about this Russian collusion investigation. Let's listen.
Can you tell us anything about that meeting with the DOJ up on Capitol Hill today?
Yeah, it was a classified briefing of what we call the Gang of Eight, which is the leadership of the House and Senate, along with the Intel committee leaders. And I really can't because it was a classified briefing, and that's what classified means.
Yeah. Were you surprised with what you learned?
Nothing particularly surprising. Again, it was classified, so there's no real report I can give to you.
I won't go down this hole, but should Congress be privy to this material if it is part of this investigation?
Yeah, I think occasionally briefing the gang, the so-called Gang of Eight, is a good idea for the administration. They agreed to do it, and we were glad they did.
All right, about this investigation and broadly about the Russia probe, the former National Intelligence Director, James Clapper, is out with a new book, and he accuses you and Speaker Ryan of essentially not caring about foreign interference in the 2016 election as long as President Trump won. In this book, he writes, quote, "I was disappointed but not surprised. It seemed they had decided by then that they didn't care who their nominee was, how he got elected, or what effects having a foreign power influence our election would have on the nation as long as they won." Your response to that, sir?
Well, it's almost laughable. I mean, the administration and the various players involved in underestimating the whole episode have been looking around for others to blame. That's an absurd suggestion. Clapper knows better, and he shouldn't have written it.
Do you think that this investigation is coming closer to an end?
I have no idea, but I think it would be great if we got to a conclusion, and got to a conclusion sometime soon.
Okay, so while the rest of us are pretty stirred up about what's going on in terms of the subversion of the country, Clapper knows better. He shouldn't have written it. That's the anger you get. Now, let me tell you, if you ask Mitch McConnell about conservatives, he would give you a passionate condemnation of Jim Jordan, of conservatives in the House, conservatives in the Senate. He hated Ted Cruz. He would be real passionate. But that's the only time, except for money. He is very passionate about making money, but not so much about, he just hopes it's over soon, you know, hopes it's over soon. And James Clapper shouldn't have written it. He shouldn't have written it. He should have known better. So that's the rise you get out of him from that. And then we turn to North Korea. Clip 13.
Let me turn to today's news about the North Korean summit, the summit in Singapore that's now been called off. Your reaction to that?
I think the president did the right thing. You know, we've seen three generations of North Korean leaders engage in similar ploys in order to get relief from sanctions. It seems that the Kim Jong-un is a chip off the old block, and I think the president didn't want to be played with, wanted to make sure the North Koreans understood he was serious, willing to engage, provided they didn't continue to play these kind of games that they've historically done with other administrations and gotten away with it. So, in sum, I think President Trump did exactly the right thing in canceling the meeting.
As far as diplomatic moves, is your sense that the hope in the White House and the expectation is that this is somehow going to get back on track eventually?
Yeah, I think we all hope it will. I mean, there's nothing that wouldn't be good about a Korean peninsula without nuclear weapons. So, sure, we all hope this gets back on track. And the next step, it strikes me, is up to the North Koreans.
Probably the best exchange. You could like him with that exchange, except you have to notice that there's no passion. It's all, it'd be good. It'd be good if we, it'd be good if we had a, North Korea was aiming missiles at us, 6 months ago? We were worried about going to war with North Korea, but it's the absence of passion, that is so distressing. I think when people in Washington, it happens in the media, it happens in Congress, when they've been there too long, everything becomes political, everything is a chess game for them, and they don't take anything very seriously. But then he's asked about recess. And this is interesting. Let's listen.
Yes or no? Will you cancel parts of the August recess?
Yeah, I'll have more to say definitively about that the week after next. But I've said to all the press corps and the members up here, I wouldn't buy any non-refundable tickets.
Right. And there's a tweet from Burgess Everett saying, I told Senator McConnell I delayed my August vacation. His response was, you should. And I guess the question is, if the Congress can't get what it needs to get done from January through July, how much will a couple extra weeks help you?
Well, Brett, this has been a period of extraordinary accomplishment. The notion that Congress hasn't been doing anything is utter nonsense, disproved by the facts. This has been the most productive year and a half in the time I've been in the Senate, and I'm now in my third decade, particularly for those of us who want to see the country right of center. You know, whether it's the Supreme Court or 21 circuit court judges or regulations repealed or comprehensive tax reform, just this week alone, we passed a Veterans Choice Act, a major, significant piece of legislation. The record of this Congress is quite spectacular, and we'll be able to add even more achievements throughout the summer, and fully intend to, by taking up the Farm Bill, by taking up the National Defense Authorization Act, and beginning to function on appropriation bills, which the Democrats ground to a halt last year. We think that's not going to happen this year.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that nothing's getting done. I was suggesting whether you needed how much more could get done in that additional time if you choose to do that.
Well, okay, so he has a little passion on this issue because, as you know, and if you listen to this show, you heard quite a discussion, I think a week ago last Friday, about the work schedule of the Senate, how they're working 2.5 days a week. They're averaging 2.5 days a week, and much of the time that they're in session, they're pretending to be in session by doing a very slow roll call so that they can buy more time and people can be out longer. In terms of nominees, it's almost impossible. The president still has so few of his nominees in place. And now they blame the Democrats. And yes, the Democrats are to blame, but so is Mitch McConnell and the lazy Senate. I have to tell you, they just took another 10 days last week off. But now he's, you know, blustering about them taking the August recess. And one senator just, what, forgot the senator's name in that little clip, but I'm going to delay my August vacation. And then McConnell says, well, you should. So they're still going to take it, but maybe just delay it a little bit. They're such men of courage, you know. They're full of fire, determined to get these nominees through, right? No, not so much. Not so much. And yet Mitch McConnell tells us it's spectacular. It's spectacular what the Senate has achieved, more than any Senate since he's been there for 30 years. Well, if that's the case, that would explain a lot, wouldn't it? All right, so then he turns to DACA. And let me just stop for a second, tell you that the discharge petition in the House only needs two more votes, two more moderate Republicans who will join with the Democrats to pass a broad form of legalizing DACA and creating amnesty for millions of people. And this is the next section. Let's listen.
If the House discharges discharge petition on DACA happens and succeeds, would you take that up in the Senate?
Yeah, my view on immigration, you may or may not recall, back in February, I brought up the subject of immigration, allowed a wide open debate with amendments. We spent a week on it on the Senate floor and passed nothing. If there's a bill that clears the House that President Trump indicates he would sign, then I'll give it serious consideration, because then we would be making a law and not just, spinning our wheels for a week or so. I can't afford to do that. We have appropriation bills to pass and other measures that I just mentioned to you a few moments ago that will take up floor time, not to mention additional confirmations of judges and members of the executive branch that are pending before us.
Couple more quick things. One is the criticism of the president and this administration, not just coming from Democrats. Here is Senator Jeff Flake in pretty pointed language yesterday.
All right. Well, we got interrupted there. So let's just say that you can see that he thinks that DACA is kind of funny. I made my, I don't know. Well, we'll pass that. You know, this is a very big deal. A Senate and the House may very well undermine the will of the people. Yet once again, this might be a victory for them. But I do want to hear Senator Jeff Flake's comments and his response. So let's listen to clip 16.
Your national leadership is, well, not good at all. Our presidency has been debased by a figure who seemingly has a bottomless appetite for destruction and division, and only a passing familiarity with how the Constitution works. And our Article I branch of government, the Congress, that's me, is utterly supine in the face of the moral vandalism that flows from the White House daily.
Your reaction to that, Senator?
Well, obviously, I don't agree with that. I wish Jeff were going to run again and stay in Congress and try to have an impact. He decided to leave, to retire. So he can say what he will. I obviously don't agree with that. I think this has been a period of extraordinary accomplishment by both the president and the Republican Congress.
All right. So Senator Jeff Flake says that this president is debased. The office of the presidency, this is destructive, divisive. It's moral vandalism coming out of the White House. And Brett Baer asks Senator McConnell what he thinks. And he says he wishes Senator Flake would stay in the Senate, because no condemnation. He can say what he wants. No defense of President Trump whatsoever, except in the very mildest form. Wouldn't you be angry if you heard someone say that? Wouldn't you respond in a different way? All right, I know I spent a long time on that, but I wanted you to hear what the majority leader in the Senate of the United States, the Republican leader from Kentucky, how much passion he lacks, and why we are, in part, in the situation that we are in. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.